young people as clones of our
sense of reality. We want them to have the controllable. And we'll call it education. And it means that we'll take children from their parents at a very early age and we'll keep them there about 5 days a week at least, all the way through their formative years, and we'll pound them every day with our version of reality.
Burn your history books, kill your TVs. What you're being fed is disease. You're being led to dis-ease. Wake up your consciousness, live free.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Free Your Mind podcast. It's a very exciting episode that we have for you today. This is episode number 93, and we're welcoming back my good friend and friend of the show. And you know what? Honestly, you are the inspiration that started this show, Mark. Mark Passio. Mark Passio is an independent researcher, public speaker, radio talk show host, conference organizer, and freedom activist from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mark has undertaken the task of assembling vast amounts of research in the areas of metaphysics, occultism, spirituality, symbology, and consciousness studies. And in 2007, Mark began presenting his information in the form of a presentation series entitled What on Earth is Happening, with the intention of bringing the implications of this body of knowledge to greater public awareness. In 2008, Mark launched his own website, whatonearthishappening.com, and in 2010, Mark began hosting his own weekly internet show, also called What on Earth is Happening, which continues today in the form of a podcast on Mark's website. And if you haven't checked out that website, go right now. Pause this, go to episode number one, start there, and start to get initiated in the occult knowledge that is how this world is truly ran. And Mark is also one of the co-hosts of the Free Your Mind, a Philadelphia-based conference on consciousness, mind control, and the occult. Over the years, Mark has worked closely with activist groups in his areas such as Tesla Science Foundation, Truth, Freedom, Prosperity, and Survive and Thrive Philadelphia. Mark's latest endeavors include teaching a few seminars, one he did on natural law, the real law of attraction, and how to apply it to your life. He did Demystifying the Occult with Jay Parker just recently. He did a Second Amendment, the true meaning of the Second Amendment, that I recommend everybody watching, as well as his most recent presentation at the Free Your Mind Conference number 4, Unholy Feminine. And great to have you back on the show, Mark. Welcome.
Bill, it's a pleasure to be here on the Free Your Mind podcast. Thanks so much for inviting me back.
Well, thank you for what you do, man. And literally, I was mentioning this earlier, you are the inspiration for this podcast. And, you know, I'm just a normal guy here in Washington that, you know, I heard your podcast. And as I was working out on my property here, it was like nothing I've heard before. And it made so much sense. And, you know, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for having the courage to speak the truth and to, you know, for building your own platform where people can access this information without any financial firewalls, and, you know, showing, not just saying, but showing that the truth is the most important thing to you.
That's right. You know, it's all about reaching out to others. Part of the great work, the biggest part of the great work in changing human consciousness for the better, is not even just going through the personal changes yourself to learn about what's really going on within ourselves and within our world, but it's reaching out to other people to help them to make that personal transformation as well. So I find that taking action is the most critical thing, and if people don't take it to the action stage, I don't think that they have really gone all the way in their personal transformation. So it's all ultimately about action and reaching out to others. So I appreciate that sentiment, Bill.
Well, you bet. And we talk about action, you know, especially with order followers, where we ask that question, who is more culpable, the people giving the orders or the ones carrying it out? And there is that key word right there. When you carry something out, you have to invoke that action.
That's right. I mean, without them doing those behaviors, the so-called elite of the world, the people who are making the decisions about, you know, what they want to implement in the world, would never be able to get done their, you know, dark and depraved and twisted agendas. They would just be kind of madmen who other people would look at and say, oh, you know, good luck trying to get that done. But with the people who they have at their disposal who are trying to following their orders and obeying their commands and doing the actions that they command them to take, then they actually can get done the very evil deeds that they wish to accomplish, these people in high positions of power. If those order followers were to be reached in consciousness and they were to step aside from doing these barbaric behaviors that they're ordered to do, there's no way that the agendas on the part of the elitists of the world could possibly be carried out. Their agendas would crumble practically overnight. And that's why I thought it was so important to make a presentation regarding how these order followers are really the creators of what people have called the Dark New World Order. They're the ones who are making it, not the people who are issuing the commands, but the people who are actually carrying out the commands. The world doesn't get changed without action, at the ultimate level. And if people aren't willing to carry out the orders of these people in positions of power, the world couldn't be reshaped into the image and likeness that they wish to reshape it into. And instead, we would have a world that is more based in freedom than we have right now.
Absolutely. Well, in the dark occultists that run this world, they know the human psyche, and they know a lot more about humanity than the average person is even interested in. You know, they know about the Milgram experiments. They know, because they funded them, that 2/3 of humanity would literally shock someone to death just because someone, quote unquote, in charge told them it was for a quote unquote good reason.
It's truly amazing how much occultists realize that the average population remains in complete ignorance of. That's what dark occultism is all about. It's about holding the knowledge of the human psyche and the human motivations and using that knowledge that you have, that you know other people don't have because they aren't as studied and they aren't as well versed in those areas, and you're using it as a weapon against them, because a differential in knowledge will invariably create a differential in power if the people who hold that knowledge, while others remain ignorant of it, are of a certain type of consciousness, which is a very low base consciousness and one that wants to control. That's why it's so important to understand the occult world, because it understood will help level the playing field. If you level the playing field of knowledge, the playing field of power will eventually be leveled. And that's why I think outreach is so important, to reach out to other people and help explain these dynamics to them and help them to understand what's going on. That's all what following orders is about, is the Milgram experiment show it perfectly. As you said, being willing to carry out the commands just because you perceive someone in a position of authority or leadership, them telling you, oh, no, I'll take responsibility for it because I'm telling you to do it. But who's really responsible for it, the person who's telling someone to do it or the person who actually does it and carries out the behavior through their actions? You know, people think that they can pass the buck of personal responsibility, and they really can't. It's like you're responsible for the behaviors that you carry out regardless of why you chose to carry them out, if somebody else told you to or not. So the Milgram experiments definitely go a long way in helping to show that human consciousness is still stuck at a very base level, and a level that wishes the psyche of most people, you know, has this the psychological desire underneath, to deep down in the subconscious, to not take personal responsibility for oneself and to try to, you know, pass the responsibility for those actions along to someone else. People want other people to tell them what to do so that they don't have to say, that was entirely my action, my decision, and I did it on my own, and I have to take personal responsibility for it. Well, the reality of the matter is, regardless of why someone takes a behavior, your behavior is your own, and you have to take personal responsibility for it. It does not matter at all whether you think you're doing the right thing, and yet you're doing the wrong thing. It does not matter at all whether someone gave you a command, issued you a command, and you think that that was somehow valid or legitimate or some kind of a good thing to do. You, if you're the one who's doing the behavior, you're personally responsible for that behavior, whether you like it or not.
Period. And that's, you know, and people, you know, let's look at the word responsibility, your ability to respond to a given situation. And, you know, I said, I heard you say earlier about the low consciousness of the cultists that run this world. And, you know, when you use this knowledge for your own personal gain, that's a whole different ballgame than when you're using this knowledge to set humanity free. And, you know, it's a low vibration of want and keeps you into that fear modality. And that's what they want people to be in, that modality, because we're so much more likely to act based on emotion, 10 times more likely to act based on emotion than we are on pure intellect. And the marketers of the world know that, and that's why they want to get you into a fear or a love, or they want to pair their products with emotions because they know how the human mind works. And real quick on the Milgram experiment, I just watched, there's a show on Netflix called The Experimenter.
Oh yes, I've seen it. It's pretty well done.
Yeah, I was impressed, man, and it blew my mind when the doctor came in and they asked, and they showed, you know, the people that were the subjects of this experiment, that this was all fake, because obviously there was duress, there was stress, there was, you know, these guys were, you know, having a hard time with it, but they were continuing the action.
That's right.
And one guy, you know, that made me so proud. One guy, that's it, out of all of these guys, stopped and said, look it, I have the free will. I made the decision to come here. I'm making the decision to stop, and there's nothing you could do about it. I'm just sorry that I hurt another person.
That's right.
And that warmed my heart. And then another guy that he was questioning, he said something at the end very, very important that people need to pay attention to. He said, well, who is responsible? And the guy that took the action to shock the person, he literally looked at this guy, the doctor, with a dumbfounded look on his face, and he said, I don't know.
Wow. Wow. He couldn't make the connection that if he's performing the behavior, ultimately he's responsible. And that's where most of humanity is at. That's why they make so many excuses for order followers, sadly. You know, they haven't made the connection that this is a free will universe. Free will is the force that ultimately reigns supreme in this universe, and it doesn't make a difference what justifications people give for doing what they do. You have free will to perform an action or not perform an action. And, you know, it really illustrates that particular film, how much people psychologically are in a state of denial and that they don't want to acknowledge that they have personal responsibility for their own actions, and no one else ultimately does. Ultimately, it's not to say, of course, that order givers bear no personal culpability or moral responsibility for what they are telling people to do. Of course they do. That's not to let them off the hook whatsoever at all. But we're talking about who's more morally culpable in these instances where someone's issuing a command and someone's following a command. The person who carries out the behavior is always more morally culpable. You know, I mean, it really does play off on fear. They're using fear to their benefit because, you know, they put somebody in this situation where they're like, oh, we have to have this done. It's very important. We have to study the results, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people like hear that from a person who's in a position of so-called authority, even in the scientific community. These weren't even government people. These were people who were, authorities in their respective scientific fields and trying to study something from, you know, a scientific perspective. And even, you know, hearing it from a doctor or a scientist, they, you know, bow down to their so-called authority and, accepted that, I'll do this behavior as long as you're willing to say that it's your responsibility. People are, very much in that state of denial that, that responsibility is rests squarely upon their own shoulders if they perform the action. So, to go back to something that you spoke about briefly before, these people are exploiting their high level knowledge. The people in these positions of power are exploiting their high level knowledge about how the human motivations work. They know that people are in denial about personal responsibility. They know that they want to pass the buck off to someone else and say, well, I could do this, but someone else is responsible for it. And that's what the occult is, folks. You have to understand, when you know so much more about someone else's personal motivations and what's going on deep within their subconscious mind than they do, it's a piece of cake to exploit them and to manipulate them. And, it's not to say that the knowledge of what's going on within the human psyche is negative or evil. That's what people have to understand. The occult in and of itself simply means hidden knowledge. Mm-hmm. That's all it is hidden. It's not known by the average person because it's been hidden from their sight for so long. Now it's all out in the open, of course, but this previously hidden knowledge is not necessarily evil. You have to look at it like a tool. Any tool in and of itself is neutral. You can use a gun for self-defense or you could use a gun for murder. It's a neutral tool until it's acted with by a consciousness. And if people take knowledge, which could be used for any given purpose, it could be used for the uplift of humanity and it could be used for manipulation and enslavement. If they take it and they use it for the wrong reason, it doesn't necessarily mean that that thing is evil. It's like a kitchen knife. Mm-hmm. You could cut some food up for someone and feed them and nurture them with using a kitchen knife, or you can stab somebody using a kitchen knife and harm or kill them. It's a neutral tool. It depends on whose hands it's in. And that's what people have to really keep in mind when it comes to the occult, because the word occult has been mystified, so to speak. It's been taken into a connotative definition that's given by people in the media and in Hollywood, et cetera, as meaning evil. And it certainly, without a doubt, does not mean anything that's evil. It simply means that it's very difficult to see because it's been hidden for so long. And that's why it's our job to de-occult these things. It's our job to help people to go into this knowledge and study it, because if people all understand it and it becomes common knowledge, no one can really use it for exploitation and manipulation and ultimately enslaving others.
That's right. And when you start to be privy to this knowledge, you start to see the forces of manipulation that are present, and you want to wake more and more people up, and then you start to see that people don't want to wake up, and that it gets uncomfortable. And that's just like the people that rely on this fear and putting people into positions that make them uncomfortable to see how they're going to react. Hearing this stuff might make you uncomfortable, and
that's right.
You have to take it in anyway, and listen to it, and just like what you said, observe. Don't react, just observe. And
it's like someone who doesn't want to acknowledge that they're physically ill. Hmm. If you're physically ill and your doctor tells you you have a disease or you have a serious illness, if you want to ignore it completely, it's just going to get worse and worse until possibly you die. That's the situation humanity is in. There's people who are acting as almost an immune system response. They're telling them, look, this is wrong. This is an illness. This is a disease. You're sick. And people are in denial. They don't want to hear it because it's a frightening situation. It's not a pleasant situation. It is uncomfortable. But to just say, they're uncomfortable with that, I'll just let them continue to ignore it, is like letting an illness run amok and take over the entire body and ultimately destroy the host organism, and they're going to die. So it's about raising awareness, even in spite of the uncomfortable nature of the situation, even in spite of the fact that people may not want to hear it and that it might cause further discomfort. Mm-hmm. We have to go through that discomfort. It's like burning an infection. It's like the immune system burning an infection out of the human body. That's really what this process of truth discovery and truth explaining is I liken it to. It's like an immune system response in the body. That's often accompanied by fever, discomfort, muscle aches, etc. But those are immune system responses that are trying to work out an infection. And that's really what people who are doing this great work, I liken them to. They're the immune system response cells in the body, and they're attacking the virus, the infection that is currently afflicting humanity, and they have to continue that work if we want to wake up other people to this infection in consciousness that has taken root here and ultimately to cure it.
Right, and don't be ignorant of it. Stop ignoring it. And that's what right. A lot of people do. They, you know, I'm really convinced that it's a mass condition of Stockholm Syndrome, that they have this nice life or things that are provided. And the Stockholm Syndrome is what happens when people that have been kidnapped start to have good feelings of their captors because they are providing them sustenance and they're the reason why they're living every day. And it actually, you know, when you start to look at this person, you start to see that it is a mental disorder. And that's what I see on a large scale in the world. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Without a doubt, there's mass worldwide Stockholm Syndrome taking place within humanity, with no doubt in my mind. And that's because people perceive that, erroneously perceive, that if they are simply physically comfortable in their surroundings, that everything is okay. That means that life is okay, because they've been conditioned to believe erroneously that life is all about just creature comfort and just being physically comfortable. And that has nothing to do with what life is really ultimately all about. I'm not knocking that and saying that you should be miserable or uncomfortable all the time. There's something to be said for having a comfortable environment and being able to do things with the resources that you have at your disposal, but that's not everything. You know, we have to take our emotional development into consideration. We have to take our spiritual development into consideration. We have to take whether we are truly free or not into consideration above everything. And, just being safe and secure and having creature comforts met does not mean that you are okay as an organism, that you are okay as an individual, or that you are okay as a society. And that's what these controllers play on. They play on that base consciousness dynamic of, oh, if my physical needs are being met and if I am clothed, have food and water and shelter, then everything is just fine and hunky-dory, and that nothing could be further from the truth. You know, we have to understand that we're living under a state of duress where people are coercing us at all times to do their will at the point of a gun. And if we don't, do what they say, or if we do what they can't do, you know, you'll be thrown in a cage as a result, or even killed. And, that state of duress means that there's a state of slavery taking place. And people have to see it. They have to look beyond this whole thing where they believe that these people are somehow concerned about us and trying to keep things from turning into chaos, and realize that these people have no concern for the average public, and all they want is control. That's what it's all ultimately about. It's been about that since day one. And it's a very naive thing to think that people in positions of power, political power, financial power, etc., want to help anybody but themselves. They want to stay in the position of power. They want to keep their institution in the position of power that it's in. And ultimately, all they really want to do is control people, because at the vast bulk of these people have a psychopathic mindset, and they just want to control and be God here on Earth. They're not interested in really improving anything. If they were interested in improving anything, they'd be discussing real freedom. They'd be discussing real personal responsibility. They wouldn't be telling anybody that they're interested in caring for them from cradle to grave. They would be telling them that they're interested in helping them to learn how to care for themselves. So this way they don't have to be dependent on someone else.
That's right.
And that's the gauge that you can use to see whether someone's genuine or not. Are they trying to make someone else independent? Are they telling them, to not be a follower, to think for themselves, and to, be dependent on no one else, because they have to ultimately develop personal responsibility so that they can care for themselves and their own community? Or are they telling them, you need us and you need to be dependent and you should, bow down and do what we say and worship us and, just be a follower? Yeah, that's the gauge that I think for whether someone truly is interested in helping humanity or not.
Well, and I know that I think that people need to realize that you didn't come here to be a follower. you know, we've been programmed that that's why you're here, and to you know, follow these people that know so much more, or that are, you know, in positions of power that are so important that we need. And, you know, when I was hearing you talk, it reminded me of a book that I definitely recommend everybody check out. It's called The Wise Men, Six Friends and the World They Made. And it's about Averill Harriman and after World War II coming up with the United Nations. And it's absolutely a fantastic book by Walter Isaacson, who's a great author. And one thing that I remember when I read this book, and it rang what you said, the teachings that you talk about, that they referred to the masses in this book as the vulgar masses. And that's exactly what they think of us as people. And what else do they call us, Mark?
They refer to the average human being who is completely unconscious, who is apathetic, and who is not taking any real-world action to create any betterment for humanity. They refer to people like that as the dead. That's what the dark occultists call the average human being that isn't really activating their consciousness whatsoever. They consider that we are deadened to the extent that we're almost like a corpse that they could just do what they want with as an inanimate object, as an inanimate piece of matter, because we're not really resisting and we're not learning on a wide scale and we're not caring on a wide scale and we're not taking action on a wide scale. So they consider us dead in that capacity, completely unconscious in all the forms of human consciousness, in thought, in emotion, and in action. And therefore, they see it as they can do whatever they want to us because we're not truly alive. It's a totally illegitimate way of looking at life and humanity, of course. But that's how the elitists and dark occultists of the world actually think. They actually, you know, believe that they're somehow absolved of their personal responsibility because other people aren't as knowledgeable as them and aren't saying no to the agendas that they suggest and put in place. And they, you know, they call their order followers dogs. They call them their pets, their animals, their dogs, because they look at it like they're just unconscious animals who they're programming commands into, and when they snap their fingers, they snap into action. So that's how they view the people who actually carry out their bidding with that kind of contempt and loathing. You know, they have this idea that they're going to be gods here, you know, that they're going to just totally usurp free will, totally usurp natural law, the laws of morality, and they're going to get away with it because they're not actually doing the actions. They're commanding other people to do the actions, and in their ignorance, they're doing it, and they're going to take the brunt of the moral consequences as a result of doing those things, and the people who actually gave the orders are going to get off totally scot-free somehow. Of course, that isn't the case. You know, they're going to be held responsible for what they do as well. But we have to understand they don't have our interests in heart. They look at us with total contempt and disdain. And people have to start realizing that, and they have to start telling that to people, especially the order followers of the world, the police and military. You're not looked on with any respect or legitimacy or, any kind of, good wishes as a human being for you by the people who are giving you your orders. They look at you as a tool, a tool to be used by them and exploited by them. And they actually call you their animals, their pets, their dogs is the most common name I've heard referred to the military and the police by the dark occultists.
Well, and I've heard useless eaters for the general public as well.
Sure.
Heard the unbegun.
The profane.
The profane.
Yes. The profane, the unbegun, meaning they haven't started. They haven't been initiated into the knowledge that they need. So they haven't even begun the spiritual quest or the spiritual journey. That's another very esoteric term that I've heard applied to the public, the unbegun, yes.
Well, and look at Henry Kissinger talking about military men are dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns for foreign policy.
I mean, that says it all right there, how they view people. There are tools. That's it. They're pawns. Game that they don't even understand.
That's right. Well, and these people that are these pawns, they run and follow out these orders like it's something admirable, and they don't use the free will that they're born here with. And when I see the number of suicides of military men and has surpassed long ago the amount of men that have died in combat, it makes sense to me.
You know, they are looking for approval because these institutions like the military and the police act as their surrogate family.
Right.
It's often people who have undergone intense parental abandonment issues earlier in their childhood, and they're looking for a surrogate family. They're looking for a proxy family that they can feel belonging in. That's what this whole psychological dynamic of order following is ultimately all about. You trace back the trauma in their earlier part of their lives, and I guarantee you, you will come to most people who are involved in the military and the police with a childhood that lacked some very, very important emotional dynamic or physical dynamic when it came to parenting, either through motherly abandonment or fatherly abandonment or both. And those parental abandonment issues are always at the root psychologically of why people seek approval and belonging in large-scale institutions and want to be joiners and want to be members of a club or members of a, somehow an elite team or something. And ultimately, they have to understand that this so-called family that they belong to, this group or club that they have joined, doesn't have their interests at heart. It doesn't care about them. It cares about its own goals. It cares about its own agendas. And it could really care less about their emotional well-being. And look, that's why you see the greatest rates of suicide in the military and many in the police as well. They use them up, spit them out when they're finished with them, and they don't care about what kind of ill psychological effects that they have suffered long term. Until these people develop the ability to heal from these traumatic issues earlier on in their childhood, confront them directly instead of letting them stay nested in their subconscious mind, and they bring that work, that shadow work, up to the surface to deal with it and work with it, they're going to stay in the same base consciousness modality that's going to allow them to continue to be exploited. We have to help them to come up out of that subconscious programming, realize that, yes, they did undergo earlier trauma regarding parental abandonment issues, and that there is healing available for them and that there's support available for them, but they have to get out of the cult that they're involved in. They have to get out of the absolute gang that they've become associated with that is all about violence if someone doesn't do their bidding. So, I think that there is a possibility of healing for people like that, but they have to be willing to admit that they were wrong, that they have psychological issues nested deeply in the subconscious mind. And it all is related to parental abandonment issues and these issues of wanting to belong. So I think if that shadow work is done, and if they have a support system in place to help them do that work, I think change is even possible for people involved that deeply in the control system.
Absolutely. Well, and one thing too that bears to mention is the culture that goes with the military and the trickle-down influence, the reflective influence that military parents do have on their kids and how they structure their everyday life. To dovetail nicely for that kid to go right into the military. And that's,
right.
another sense of belonging. And I didn't mention this earlier, but Mark also has a presentation that he did at Free Your Mind 3 called The Cult of Ultimate Evil, and where he really goes into order followers and exactly what is going on there that is so wrong. And, speaking of wrong, what is one of the most powerful statements that we can make as an individual?
I think one of the most powerful things that anybody could ever admit is that they have been wrong in the past and that they did perceive things incorrectly and erroneously. I mean, that's what it ultimately means to start to get the ego out of the way. The ego is the force that doesn't want us to acknowledge our wrongs. It doesn't want us to admit that we were wrong about something and that we did wrong action. That's why so many people seem to be incapable of admitting that they were wrong or that they're sorry for past behavior that they carried out that was a wrong against someone else. So I think if people are willing to admit that they are wrong, they're well along the way to a change in consciousness better. That's what, beginning to dissolve the calcified ego is really all about. It's about saying, you know, I didn't have this correct. I saw this incorrectly. My perceptions were, deceptive to me at the time. And then you move on and you say, well, that's what happened then. Well, what am I going to do about it now? I could either stay in a state of attachment and cling on to this erroneous perception and belief, or I can say, well, I have an opportunity here to learn from my mistake and grow in consciousness and understanding and say, I was wrong, and now I can change my thought about it, and then I could ultimately, as a result, change my behavior regarding what I have been doing and what I'm doing now. That's what growing in consciousness is all about, ladies and gentlemen. It's about your ability to admit that your perceptions in the past may not have been accurate, and that now, when new information has come to light, you can change those perceptions and, as a result, change your behavior.
Well, and there's that action word, right? In order to change behavior, you must take action. And, you know, I spoke with Fritz Springmeier a bit a while ago, too, and I talked about the suicide rate of soldiers. And he said that through their indoctrination and through their trauma-based mind control that they put these guys through, that sometimes they'll put a self-destruct kind of post-hypnotic suggestion in there as well. And right when that precipice of deciding if you were wrong is when it's activated.
Yeah, that's when they'll basically get them to see themselves in such a self-loathing way that they actually don't want to live anymore. Mm. It's a monarch mind control technique for sure. You're basically putting a self-destruct code into the program that you've created so that people can't go all the way into self-transformation and actual real change through their behavior in the world. So it's kind of like almost a fail-proof on their part, but still many people overcome that type of programming, that suicide programming that you're talking about there.
Yeah. And notice that just like what we were saying, this powerful statement that you can say, and it takes that reflection, that takes that observer role. And when you're in fear, we really can't reach that because you have to contemplate. You have to be in a situation where you can use all areas of that mind to really, really objectively get a proper understanding of the situation. And, you know, just like that word, understanding, you know, walk around, get underneath it, understand. And that's something that they don't realize what they're doing. And we were speaking about their intention, and even though they have good intentions, guess what the road to hell is paved with?
Exactly. You know, that's the thing. People have to understand, it doesn't matter about what you intend to happen. If something ultimately results in harm to other people, regardless of what your intent in your mind was, if your behavior caused that harm, you're responsible for the harm that was caused. You know, you could say, oh, I intended for, this to have a good effect on society. But if you're ultimately what that behavior is doing is destroying freedom within that society, then you have to reevaluate the behavior that you're choosing to conduct through your own free will decision. And, this is something that I think a lot of police and military have to just, buckle down and realize that they're in so much conflict about. Mm. Many of them will even say, oh, well, I don't necessarily think that this law is right, but that's what I do. That's my job.
Just doing my job, Mark.
That's all.
Yeah.
Where have I heard? I'm just following orders and doing my job. And this is what the politicians decided, so that's what I enforce. I mean, I don't think anything could be more irresponsible than that, is saying, well, I'm not going to apply my own judgment and my own discernment regarding whether something is moral or not. I'm just going to listen to what somebody else decided regarding that, and then I'm going to just do their bidding. I mean, that's completely irresponsible as far as I'm concerned.
Well, yeah, and where have we heard that before? You know, at the end of World War II, when they had all these Nazis at the Nuremberg trials, and that's what they used as their defense.
And they just following orders. It was just a chain of command, and I can't be held responsible for that. Well, they were held responsible for that. The excuse that they were just following orders didn't work there, and it shouldn't work in our society today.
Absolutely, it's just a fallacy. You know, if we look at that, that is appeal to authority. And if we start to realize, you know, the trivium and logical fallacies, you know, right away you're not going to act on that because you're going to realize that that is not right, not right action.
And that's what, you know, these people need to really work on, looking at things from a more logical perspective that takes their emotions out of it, takes their whole sense of belonging out of it, you know, because, oh, if my group is doing it, it somehow can't be wrong. What they really need to do is just try to resolve this cognitive dissonance that they have and these internal conflicts. And, you know, many of them even are aware that those conflicts are there, but they can't get the ego out of the way. See, the ego is the force that says, oh, well, you've been doing this long. You know, you've been involved for this many years. Well, you can't have gotten involved in something that's evil or wrong morally. Could you have? Could you be involved in something like that? See, that's what, when I got out of Satanism, I had to do. I had to say, right. Could I have stepped into something here that was completely immoral and wrong, and I'm a part of it? And I have to say to myself, I can't continue to allow myself to be a part of this and used like this, you know? And that's a big ego wound. That is a huge blow to the ego. And that's what most people don't want to endure, because they sit and think, well, what will my friends think about me now? What will my family think about me now? You know, what will this do to my relationships? What will this do to my income? Because they're so dependent on the money that they make, the paycheck that they get as a result of doing these behaviors. And my answer to that is, none of that matters if you compare it against what you're doing to your soul. That's what you ultimately should be concerned about. And none of that matters if you compare it against what you're doing to the freedom of an entire planet, because that's ultimately what you're affecting, and you don't have a right to affect that negatively. You don't have a right to take freedom away from other people and their free will by coercion and by duress. So those are the questions that are much more important than what will other people think about me or what will this do to my bank account. You know, those are absolutely minor and inconsequential issues when it comes to the larger dynamics involved, which deal with freedom and the human soul.
Absolutely. Well, we're talking about those creature comforts and that Stockholm syndrome we're pulling right back there. And then also we have these huge cultures that are brought about in the military and the police. You know, they call it the blue wall, or, you know, the brothers, once a Marine, always a Marine, you know, this kind of jargon that they use that, you know, gives you, you know, that, I don't know what you were saying about how people view you, you know, it puts it into that ego based kind of mentality where you are afraid of how other people view you and you rather just go with the flow than stop and be uncomfortable. Right. You know, when you had this realization that maybe you weren't living a good life, that, you know, that you needed to make some changes, was that uncomfortable?
Oh, I was so depressed I could barely get out of bed. Uncomfortable is the biggest understatement I've ever heard. I mean, I was like in a complete state of shutdown as far as my entire body, mind and spirit is concerned. I was so depressed and just, I was almost in a state of total self-loathing because of what I allowed myself to become involved in. And I had to sit and go through that and feel it and recognize it and say, hey, this is maybe in a way how I should be feeling, you know, because I allowed myself to be duped this way. You know, you don't have to go to the depths that I feel that I did either, you know, because I really beat myself up over it for a while. But I didn't have a support system coming out of it either. I did it entirely myself. I mean, that's not entirely true. I had knowledge that other people put out there. You know, I didn't have a personal support system, I should say. It was a rather impersonal one, because it was basically other people's books that they had written or information that they had shared online, and that was it. You know, it wasn't people in person in my life who were helping me out of that mindset. I had to do that on my own physically. You know, and there wasn't any physical presence of other people helping me. I think today there's you know, groups all over the place. There's meetup groups. There's people that you can go and befriend that know more about this than you may, and you could help get information from them. And they, I'm sure many of them would be willing to help form a support system for someone trying to come out of this. I mean, I think that's what we really need to do. We need to form this whole, you know, movement, the quit your cult movement, because that's what these things are. That's what these institutions are. They're cults, you know. They're religious belief systems that do harm to other people. That's the definition of a cult by any good definition. I think we need to create support systems for police and military who want to quit their cult. You know, physically, we need to do it. We need to have people in their community who are willing to help them, who are willing to share information, who are willing to, you know, hear them speak and just talk to them, you know, about, you know, what they thought was right and what they were involved with, and, you know, how they're feeling now that they're that they want to, you know, put that aside and put it down and stop following orders. We need an entire support system for former order followers who want to stop being order who have stopped and want to continue not to be order followers anymore, because order followers are the path to destruction in this society. They're the path to enslavement in this society. And we need some type of a support system in place for order followers to get out of that religious mindset. I think it's something that I want to work to formulate at some future point.
Well, and I've talked to people, the police officers, about them being in a cult, and it was so abstract to them that they laughed. Like, they were like, "What?" It absolutely is what it is, you know. Is this cult of following orders, and it's a death cult. They celebrate death, and you know, it reminds me. I work with veterans that I've worked with training dogs for them, and sometimes I do service dogs. And I remember this guy. His name was Jeff, and he said to me, "Bill, I became a murderer for a lie." And I'm still dealing with that right now.
That's it. That person's well on the way to healing. If they can make a statement like that, they're not in a bad position at that point. They were, but to be able to admit that to yourself, of all people, that means you're 99% ahead of the rest of humanity, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. And that's what we need to provide, is that care, you know, to allow them to navigate in that mind and be like, "Look, I messed up, and here's how I write my path." And
right.
And, you know, even though we might be held culpable for our actions after this life, I don't know if we do hurt another person. I think that we're going to have to deal with maybe that person or whatever on the other side. But here, you know, we're going to have to help our fellow humans. And how we do that is by providing an environment of care that they can explore who they really are and what they're here for. And just like what Mark said, how being uncomfortable is an understatement when they start to delve into the shadow that is yourself. But just like when we anneal metal, or, you know, when you do temper, where you throw it into a flame and then back into water and back into flame, and it strengthens it. And our biggest strengths lie within our greatest challenges.
Without a doubt. I mean, that's what this place is. It's a learning experience. We're here to learn and grow in consciousness, you know, and without challenges, that would be very difficult. So, you know, we have to look at these things as opportunities to create care in our environment and to create support systems for people that need it. And that's what sharing information is all about, ultimately. I mean, you could look at what on earth is happening as, you know, an exercise in care creation through the dissemination of knowledge that, you know, is amassed in one place. And it's kind of a stepwise progression or initiation for people that they can go through if they so wish it. So without a doubt, you know, that's what this is ultimately all about, is learning and growing in consciousness. And if we come together as small communities within the madness, within the asylum, you know, that's going on all around us, and provide a support system for people to learn and to change, I think we can make that process a lot easier for them.
Is that what you believe being a freedom activist is all about?
I think that's a huge part of it. It's also, you know, speaking out and, you know, reaching out to people and exposing the darkness as well. I mean, we, you know, have to realize that there's two components to this. There's exposing what's wrong and then taking the right action to set it right, you know, to create the new systems that we need to live with and around in the new world that we wish to create. So, you know, it's a dual thing. It's while exposing the darkness, we need to start building new systems of support. And they have to be done in a tempered way, in a way that is, you know, long-term sustainable and not based in coercion and, you know, based in cooperation and true care. So, you know, I think it's possible. It's just that so many people are so attached to the old existing systems that don't really serve us, that don't serve who we are, but it's all that they've known. So it's kind of this philosophy going around, better the devil you know than the devil you don't know, or something to that effect, yeah. Or better the known that is killing you than the unknown that may be able to take you out of that negative environment, but you have to go through the process of learning about it. And that could be a fearful process, especially if it's explaining that the old ways of doing things have been very harmful and destructive to human freedom and to the human spirit. So it requires courage. You know, courage is one of the big dynamics that, you know, is so important in all of this. But you cannot really create in someone else. You can inspire it by example. You can live according to, a positive way of living and be an inspiration for other people, set an example by how you live, and then maybe that could inspire courage in another to follow in your footsteps. But it's very difficult to actually create courage in someone else. You have to that has to be done internally through internal work. And I think the best way of doing that is just learning about what's really going on, and you don't have to be fearful of it, because you could say, you know, just knowing what's got – I look every day, okay, I think – thank God I know the truth about what's going on in the world versus being ignorant of it. Just the dynamic of standing within truth and recognizing this is what's really taking place, instead of what the nonsense and lies that they're telling people on the media or in newspapers or on TV is. Just stepping in that dynamic. And some people will say, well, isn't that uncomfortable because you know how bad it is? Mm-hmm. No. To me, it's not. It would be infinitely more uncomfortable not knowing the truth. I rejoice and celebrate the fact that just standing in the dynamic of truth, as horrible as those truths may seem, is so much infinitely better. And that inspires courage in me, because it's like, well, hey, at least you know. At least you're not one of these people who's stuck in the more of ignorance, who's stuck in the abyss of ignorance. You've pulled yourself up out of that, at least. And, you know, everything else will follow once you understand the truth about what's going on. It's that old adage from the New Testament, know the truth and the truth will set you free. Well, because I've come to that truth about what the world is and what's going on within it, that's a powerful sense of freedom. And you're taking personal responsibility for your own life as a result of that knowledge. You know, there's no more powerful feeling as far as I'm concerned. And that's one of the reasons I always have to be some gratitude in my life.
Well, one thing that I remember when I heard the scope of the material that you put out, and I remember when I first called you and talked to you, I said, man, your information has calmed me down. And I've heard that over and over again from people. Yeah. It's like, look, now the world is starting to make sense.
Makes sense, exactly.
You know, there's no disconnect here. I got the, you know, I can kind of, when you start to do connect the dots, you know, and you start at the beginning, you're like, huh, I don't know what this is. And then as you get further and further down the line, you're like, oh, okay, cool. This is what it is. This is where the next one is to form the leg of this shape that we're making. And it starts to provide you clarity, you know,
recognition. pattern recognition. Recognition's always going to make you calmer to be able to respond to what you're seeing rather than not recognizing something. When you're not in recognition, you tend to go into a fear response mode. But when you do recognize what something is, you don't necessarily fear it. Even if it is something that's unpleasant, you say, oh, I recognize that. I know what that is.
Yeah. Well, and it also bears to mention that you just started this not even 10 years ago, man. You know, as far as putting out the information, being a public speaker, and look at the vast amount of knowledge that you have put out there, and now look at the people that are starting to take action based on your action. You know, I'm a perfect example of it. I would have never thought in a million years that I'd be on a podcast, you know, talking to people about all the various subjects that I talk about. But once you know, and to not act is, you know, as we talk about, is not to know. And so, you know, there's that word action again. And, you know, this reminds me of that Carl Jung quote about people will do anything, no matter how absurd, to avoid facing their own souls.
That's right. You know, the thing that makes me the most hopeful is when I see people who are actually applying the concepts and ideas that I talk about and reaching out to others with them and taking real world action. I appreciate when someone says thank you for what you do. That's always a nice sentiment to receive. But the thing that I think that people can thank me, quote unquote, by doing the most is by applying this information themselves and teaching it to others themselves, which is why what you do is so incredibly appreciated by me. And many other people have started doing things like this as well, reaching out to other people, taking real world action, sharing the knowledge and information, putting it out there for others.
They're exercising courage as well, because what is courage? To feel that fear and to take the action anyway.
In spite of that fear, that's right. They're exercising courage and care, you know, and that's what this is all – that's what's going to provide the solution. That's what's going to be the fuel to get us out of this dynamic that we are currently trapped in. So that's the thing that inspires me when I see other people taking action. That's the thing that makes me always feel good and feel inspired and encouraged. So I think there's no better way of sort of quote unquote paying me back for putting out this information in the tapestry and organization that I have than helping to put that out there for other people and spread the awareness. That's the thing that makes me feel the best when people tell me that they've become involved in doing.
Yeah. Well, and we all have something to teach each other, and we all have something to learn from each other. And the way that I present information may be totally different than the way that you present information. It might be the same information, but it will resound with a different crowd. And that's why it's important to get so many voices and so many people to act, to take the initiative to practice courage, to practice care, to set our fellow humans free. And with this information, it's possible. It's just going to take some work, and that's why they call it the great work.
That's right. It's not called the great party. It's not.
I wish it was.
This is going to require effort, folks. You know, it's going to be something that requires persistence. It's going to require constancy and effort. It's like moving a very, very, very large weight, and you're going to need a lot of people to come and help move that large weight. It's not going to be moved by a tiny few people. You know, a lot of people have bought that New Age notion that it's only going to take a very small amount of people. You know, it's going to take a lot of people to change the mental dynamic of humanity. Mm. You know, small amounts of people can change physical dynamics, like through physical revolutions. But ultimately, if the mental dynamic doesn't get changed, you're not going to see real world lasting change in the long term.
Evolution.
So, yeah, that's right. Evolution is only going to happen by the vast majority of people stamping out old, outdated ideas that don't serve who we are. You know, more people have to come on to the truth than stay attached to the lie. I think it's at least a 50-50 dynamic that you have to achieve, or I think it's really beyond that. You have to go beyond half and half. It's gotta you know, be maybe 2/3 of the people have to accept the truth for the lie to be eradicated. You know, I think the only way to do that is by putting this information out there for other people's consideration, because the media is not going to do that. The government's not going to do that. The school system's not going to do that. Religion is not going to do that, folks. You know, for people who think that that's some bastion of safety in this world of, you know, deceit and lies. You know, none of these institutions are talking about what's really taking place or going on. We have to do it. We have to be the new media. We have to be the truth tellers of the world, and do that with courage, in spite of whatever fears we may have, and realize that this is something that requires skills. This is something that requires a lot of time and patience and hard work. This isn't something you just wish and then it comes about. You know, I mean, I may be doing a seminar soon, Bill, on what are all the things that we need to know to be an alternative media host. I mean, you just think about it. You don't just press a button and a web page goes up and a podcast gets posted to it. Right. It's not how it works. You have to have a lot of different varied aspects of knowledge in technology. You know, you have to be able to record. You have to be able to edit audio and video. You have to be able to know how a website works if you want to build your own site. You know, you have to know how to promote. You know, there's networking involved and promotion involved. You know, there's a whole lot of skill sets involved, making graphics, etc. Not just that, but then, you know, how to do a podcast, how to actually organize your thoughts, how to create outlines and ideas that you want to have a flow to cover during the thing. It's not like you just do that 2 minutes before the event, you know, if you want it to come out good. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's all these different aspects and skill sets involved that many people don't even think about when it comes to, you know, doing this work. And, you know, I may do a seminar in the very near future on, you know, how do we do this? You know, what's involved? What are some of the programs that you can use? You know, how do you put a website up? How do you edit audio for a podcast series? You know, how do you make a flyer to promote an event in Photoshop? You know, I think these are real world practical skills that I think a lot of people, you know, don't know how they work and might want to learn. And if we teach those skill sets to other people, then maybe they might get involved in the war effort, so to speak.
Absolutely. Well, and take action to sway that, you know, the population to that 2/3 of people. And I think that it's interesting that 2/3 of people already would shock you to death because somebody else told you too that was wearing a lab coat.
Right.
And we need to get that to switch the other way around. And that is a huge, huge amount of work, you know, because it's hard to see the scope of the work that needs to be done when you just belong to these truth groups and these truth movements, and then go and try to talk about not vaccinating your kids in the general public, or talk about GMOs or chemtrails or any of that stuff, and watch how people look at you. And you're going to realize really quick that we have a very, very long way to go.
That's right.
And we talk about, you know, the Carl Jung quote, you know, just like people will do anything, no matter how absurd, you know, whether it's paint their body the color of their favorite team and go scream passionately and spend thousands and thousands of dollars to follow these, you know, the breads and circuses that
right.
That, you know, these people that they'd have no clue. And even if they were to meet these people, they probably wouldn't like them. And then the whole time they have their family in duress, or and it needs to, we need to switch that the priorities. And, you know, some of it comes through walking the walk, but it's also giving them access to information that they can stumble upon or listen to on their own to do that work, that inner work that needs to be done, that shadow work.
Without a doubt. I mean, you know, people have to realize that until they confront what's going on within themselves and change that dynamic for the better, it's not possible to change the world dynamic for the better. It's the principle of correspondence.
That's right.
That That which is without is like to that which is within. That which is above is like to that which is below. The microcosm is a reflection of the macrocosm, and vice versa. The macrocosm is a reflection of the microcosm. So the world is the way that it is, folks, because the individuals within it are the way that they are. It's an inescapable conclusion. Until people change themselves on a mass scale, do not expect the world to be any different on a mass scale. And that's something that's very unpopular to hear. I tend to receive a little bit of flack about that because people say, well, what you're saying is that most people in the world are so bad that they continue to allow the world to be as bad as it is. And the answer is yes, that's true. Sadly, that's the sad fact of the matter, that the vast majority of people are so immoral and so inactive when it comes to trying to make the world any better of a place that the world remains a horrible place for the most part. They're not to say that there's no good things taking place within it, but it's still a world that's based in violence and slavery. And unless more people at an individual level do the shadow work that they need to do to confront the subconscious programming that's going on within their own psyche, and that happens on a mass scale, not just small levels like it's happening now. It is happening. It's happening at small levels, and it is growing. So I think we're on the right track, but we have a long, long journey ahead to go to get this up to the numbers that it needs to be to really create some type of a chain reaction effect. Until people are willing to do that on a mass scale, I tell people don't expect the world to change for the better. Expect it to stay the way it is, the way that it is now, or even possibly get worse. So that's what we need to encourage. We need to encourage that personal shadow work that can only be done by the individual, but it can be assisted by people who are helping them through providing knowledge to them. And then once they have that knowledge, they're empowered to be able to do that work on their own.
Well, it reminds me of that Michael Tesserian quote where he says that the people's inability to even deal with suffering is a huge problem in this world. And we look at Western medical and even with conventional medical, how they snuff out symptoms. You know, right. As soon as you start to feel, bad, they want to give you a pill that makes it go away instead right. of looking at this as an indicator that, something below this symptom is causing this, and we need to go to that causality and really work on that instead of striking at the leaves of a problem. We go to the root.
That's right.
And knowing that, with correspondence, that the universe is holographic and is self-similar across all scales, and just like what you were saying, the macrocosm and the microcosm is the individual units that comprise that whole. But as we one at a time, start to change and start to act based on the information that we have received, we're going to start influencing others around us. And that's it, is one of the hermetic principles of correspondence. Very important.
Without a doubt. I mean, the ultimate thing that we have to understand is that we need to help people to confront things that they currently are in denial about and don't want to confront because of the fear that they are in. That fear is shutting people down. And when you get shut down like that, you tend to just want to continue to ignore things. Again, this is not something that's unfixable. These things, they do have solutions. It's just that we have to stop looking at things from a perspective of only looking at the problem. We have to get down to that causal factor level of the problem. That is what can be the most frightening for people, because they'll realize, oh, it's not just about money. It's not just about politics. This is about what is going on within us, the mind. That's the thing that a lot of people want to run away from. They don't want to confront themselves because, again, they have these abandonment issues going on. They have trauma going on that they don't want to drudge up and look at. They have things about themselves that they don't like and that would need to be confronted and ultimately changed long term. That's the most difficult work there is. That's what making the darkness within us truly conscious is. That's what that process is. And that's the thing that most people don't want to do. More people would want to deal with the external factors, the external so-called realities, okay? Let's attack the financial system. And I'm not saying we shouldn't. I'm not saying that that's a moral thing, the Federal Reserve System and other central banking, scams, okay? We should look at those things. But if you think that all this is about is money, you're missing the greater picture. Should we be saying these government systems that are built up in all the countries are all completely corrupt? Of course they are. And that should be looked at and that should be dealt with. But if you think it's all only about that, you're missing the bigger picture. This is about human consciousness and how it has stayed attached to wrong ideas over long swaths of time. We need to change how we think. That's what this change is ultimately all about. When we change how we think, we'll look at these institutions and go, oh my God, how could we have been so stupid? How could we have allowed this to continue for as long as we did allow it to continue for? You know, it'll go away practically overnight if we change that level of consciousness. So the consciousness change has to precede the worldly change, has to precede the change on the mass scale. We do that internal work, we're going to see that change, and we have to dispel the fear of doing that by, you know, coming together, providing support systems for doing that work. And things like your podcast, things like, you know, the work that I've put up on What on Earth is Happening, those are support systems. And then you could even come to events like Free Your Mind and other conferences, and, you know, you can meet people in person and form a network. There might be people who come from your area that you meet there, that will enable further networking and further branching out and support systems to be created in all different places in the country and in other countries.
Well, and keep in mind that it's going to cause, you know, further discomfort as well, because you're going to delve into different aspects of this work that you need to delve into. And just like what Mark was saying, it's not just a one solution fits all. You know, it's not just the financial. It's not just the poison worldview that's being pumped out every day by the media. It's not just the schools that are indoctrinating people with 15,000 hours of indoctrination as kids. It's this whole picture, and it takes that eclectic knowledge base, and it takes time, and it takes, you know, knowing how to critically think and how to put information together. And then once you stop and look around at these various, you know, models of manipulation, it starts to become comical. But on one aspect, it breaks your heart too, because you see the loved ones following it with everything. And the Western medical is another one too, that I've seen so many people like just deteriorate to nothing by trusting these doctors that are pumping them full of poisons. And it breaks my heart, because I've seen people that I love listen to these guys that they've never met before over somebody that loves them and truly cares for them.
Right.
And, you know, that right there is a big, you know, big wake-up call too, when you start to go and realize, hey, look, I have a rapport with these people. They love me. They know that I am an intelligent guy. Let me go present some information, some truth to them, and then you get shut down right away. And so it is important to belong to a network, but, you know, use that network too to further the work. And don't just separate, you know, because remember what the work is that freedom activism. As long as another being on this world suffers, we still have a lot of work to do.
That's right. You know, I mean, that whole dynamic of appeal to authority is so strong. You know, people not wanting to listen to people who are the closest to them and, you know, who have researched this stuff on their own for years and years, rather than, you know, take the advice of someone who's, you know, gone through some indoctrination schooling and is towing the party line, so to speak, you know, just for a paycheck, because they're too scared to rock the boat and challenge the status quo. You know, that's what all of these people in, you know, established medicine are like. And, you know, there's so many alternative methods for getting physically healthy and maintaining that health and curing diseases. You know, it really is a shame when people won't look into those things because they're so attached that, to this whole appeal to authority and appeal to, well, he's the priest in the white lab coat, so I have to take his advice over someone who truly cares about me and isn't worried about being paid. You know, I think once the proof is going to be in the pudding, as they say, you know, once people realize what different alternative methods of healthcare and treatment can do, and they see the results for themselves, I think they're going to be less likely to totally support and trust the status quo establishments, and they're going to start organically flocking over to alternative methods of treatment and healing and nutrition. So I think we just have to keep hammering on those things and explaining to people that, hey, these people don't have your better interests at heart. They're doing this to protect themselves, their institutions, their establishments, and ultimately their bank accounts.
That's right. Yeah, they have pretty big college bills, tuition bills. They got nice cars out there in the parking lot, and they got kids that are going to college as well. And it just seems, you know, silly that they would make a decision that affects the life of the person that I have decided to trade my life to be with. And when they do make these recommendations that make these people sick, guess who takes care of those people? Their loved ones. And so it falls right into their lap. And, you know, we really need to start practicing the lost word. And, you know, the lost word is no. And it's N-O and K-N-O-W. There's two of those lost words. And it's a word of all power. It's only when we say no to those that would claim to be our owners and those that claim that it is they who will decide which rights we do or do not have, do we stop externalizing our power. And that's a big problem, externalizing our power to somebody else. And that's where that authority, you know, the belief in authority. Now we've externalized that power to somebody and we've called them that authority, but it takes that belief in order for that to work. So it's absolutely a religion. And, you know, externalizing your power to anyone outside of ourselves and doing so, we reclaim all of our rights. But it's very sad that very few people have the knowledge, care, or courage that is required to do this. And that's why we take action to encourage you. And look at that word, encourage. I want to encourage you to take action, to start speaking the truth. And it doesn't have to be the podcast. It could be Mark's in a band. I think you were just in Boston playing last weekend and rocking it out, man. And I'm a glass artist as well as a dog trainer. And start incorporating this knowledge into the art that you make. You know, it doesn't have to be just one size fits all. We all have, as I was saying, messages that correspond with others, and it doesn't have to be in a spoken word platform to do that.
That's right. That's right. There's many different vehicles for the expression of this information. I choose not only to do it through the spoken word, but through music. You know, and I have a band that we infuse these ideas into the lyrics and the message and the whole style and attitude of the band, and we put it out that way. If someone's better at painting, they could choose to do that and make some allegorical paintings, poetry, you know, writing, you know, other forms of music, you name it. I mean, there's no shortage of expressions for how this could be done. I mean, you could do it through tattooing and put some, you know, messages in there or symbolism in there. I mean, you could, you know, inject this message into popular culture in so many different ways, and it's whatever way that, you know, you have a talent for and feel comfortable doing. It's just a matter of doing it. It's just a matter of getting started and doing it. The hardest part of anything is starting the process.
That's right.
You know, so just the answer is to just do it, you know, and then keep doing it, you know. That's the thing. People expect immediate results in today's society and they give up too easily.
Right.
You know, you got to keep going, keep moving forward. You keep doing something long enough, people sit up and start paying attention. You know, it took years for people to really begin to truly hear what I said, I feel, and, you know, really look at the work and, you know, see it for the tapestry that it is. But once that is established, they're going to tell more people and they're going to tell more people. And it'll build slowly, you know, and it'll you'll see the the effects long term as you continue to do something.
Well, and you start to see and meet people that are like-minded, and that's what's so important about actually getting together and why the Free Your Mind Conference is so important to actually look into the hands of, or look into the hands, look into the eyes and shake the hands of people that you've been listening to. And you know, it's wonderful to meet you and hang out with you and get to know you on, you know, in person, and to see that you know, that you're a real person, that you care, and that, you know, other people are out there that are like you. It kind of charges your battery.
Yes, it does.
And so,
I mean, that's what a conference means, a bringing together. That's literally what the word means. And, you know, that's what it's all about, is meeting others who share the similar mindset and who are committed to doing that same work. You know, and it is like a battery charge. It's you're getting that burst of energy to take you through the next year or two. And, you know, seeing other people do that encourages you. You talk to them and encourage them. You know, I think that's what people, you know, who maybe come out to something like Free Your Mind will see. I'm just a regular guy. You know, I'm just, you know, a regular person who's trying to make the world a better place for those who come after me, you know, and myself. You know, I want it better for me. I don't want to live like this. I don't want to live in a state of duress and slavery. You know, I want to have a say over what happens with, you know, the things that are going on in my life and not have that dictated to me. You know, so there's self-motivation there, certainly, but it's also about, you know, who's going to come after us. You know, I don't want the world left in a total state of disarray and enslavement for those who come after me. You know, that would be the most selfish thing you could possibly allow to happen. So, you know, coming together with other people is so important, because you realize you're not alone. You realize other people are committed to this as well. And you play off that dynamic of energy, and it helps to sustain you and keep you going.
Absolutely. Well, and then also it helps you to realize solutions. And that's where we need to focus on, is solutions. And I remember something that you said on one of your podcasts about anybody can describe the prison, but what I'm interested in is how the heck do we break out of it?
That's right. You know, and there are a lot of solutions shared by many people, and they put those solutions out there, and, you know, people can decide whether they're going to act upon those solutions and implement them. And, you know, it's a whole lot of information sharing takes place at events like that. And, you know, you could kind of get a feel for, you know, where the whole you know, overall consciousness, the zeitgeist of the people is headed. And I see that it's beginning to expand more and more, because more people have turned up year over year, and they seem to be more active individuals. They seem to be people who are really, they're not just, you know, the choir, so to speak. They're the people who are going to be reaching out to other people and, you know, making a difference. So I hope to see that trend continue, and I hope other people start events like that in their area and, you know, build other communities like that. It's not just about, you know, this one conference on the East Coast that happens yearly. I mean, you know, other people can take that example that, you know, I began back in 2011 and run with that ball, you know, take it and, you know, do something that is of your own. Your own personal flair, you know, your own preference, or, you know, how you might like to see a conference go, or make a musical event, you know, and invite bands that are all freedom oriented. I mean, there's a million things that we could do and implement to bring more people together and form sort of communities regarding all of this. Skillshare, meetings. You know, I mean, that's something that I was involved with through something called Survive and Thrive back here in Philadelphia a few years back. You know, these are things that all foster community, and they show people, again, that they're not alone and that other people care, and other people even care about them and want to share knowledge and solutions with them. So, you know, the answer is get involved and do it. Put it out there in your own community, you know, and just start. And you know, that's the hardest part of the process, is starting. But, you know, just keep it up. Persistence is the other part, that you know, beginning and getting the resources that you need and beginning is often the most difficult part. But then the next part is sustaining it. you know, keeping it going. You know, that's another big dynamic. You know, that involves persistence and courage and, you know, realizing that this is just going to be long-term effort, long-term hard work is what it's all ultimately about.
The great work. That's why we call it the great work, you know. So let's switch gears a little bit, man. You wanted to be on episode number 93.
Yes.
Why is 93 significant?
93 is a big number in what I would consider light occultism, what I would consider occultism that is trying to level the playing field and by bringing occult knowledge to everyone and say this isn't for an elite few, this is the knowledge of the universe and it is our birthright. The number 9 is what has been called by some dark occultists as the number of the ego. It represents ego consciousness. And there's a reason that they ascribe 9 to be the number of ego. It's because no matter what you do with 9, it either returns to 9 or it behaves as a 0. And I'll explain this very briefly through just some simple mathematics. If you take the number 1 and add 9 to it, you get 10. Then if you take those two digits, 1 and 0, that 10 is comprised by, and you add those together, you get 1 because it's 1 plus 0 is 1.
Right.
Now, if you take the number 2 and you add 9 to it, you get the number 11. 1 plus 1, which is what 11 is made of, is 2. Okay? So if you keep reducing the number, if you get a two-digit number, you reduce it down to a single digit. You're back to 2. So we started with 1 plus 9 is 10. 1 plus 0 is 1. We're back to 1. 2 plus 9 is 11. 1 plus 1 is 2. So we're back to 2.
Right.
3 plus 9 is 12. You take the two digits of 12, add them together, 1 plus 2, you get 3. You're back to 3. In each instance, and you could do this with any number that follows it, or any number, no matter how big it is, you will always get back to the original number that you started with when you add 9. So 9, technically, in what this occult numerology that we're doing here is called gematria, acts as a 0 in gematria. Now, what that represents is symbolically here, because we are all looking at this from a perspective of symbolism when it comes to the occult, adding something and it changing nothing. This is why 9 has been considered the number of ego. Because when you add ego into a situation, you can't create any real change because ego doesn't want to admit that it's wrong. Ego doesn't want to really do anything truly positive for the others or the world. It wants to only serve itself. So nothing can change. See, this is why 9 has been called the number of the ego. Now, if you have one person acting like that, it's bad enough. But then when that multiplies, what happens? Okay, so now let's look at the multiplicative properties of 9.
Okay.
9 times 1, of course, is 9, and you're at 9. 9 times 2 is 18. Take those two digits, add them together. 1 plus 8 is 9. 9 times 3 is 27. Take those two digits, add them together. 22 plus 7 is 9. 9 times 4 is 36. 3 plus 6 is 9. No matter what number you do it with, it doesn't matter how big it is, any number that you multiply by 9, when you add up the result, the digits that comprise the result, you are going to come back to 9. So what does this represent symbolically in number? When ego multiplies, all that you can ever achieve is more of that same consciousness, more ego. When 9 multiplies, you get more 9. When ego multiplies, you get more ego in the world, and you get the same dynamic that you've been getting. No change occurs. So when you understand those two dynamics, you realize why dark occultists have seen 9 as the number of the ego, okay? And if we look at what has been biblically referenced as the number of ego, the number of base consciousness, of beast consciousness, the consciousness of Satan slash the devil, you know, the consciousness that's going to keep the world enslaved and imprisoned, that is 666. So 6 plus 6 plus 6 is 9. because it's 18. 6 plus 6 plus 6, 18. 1 plus 8, 9. So 9 is the number of the beast, just represented in a different way as 666. Mm. So we're talking about ego here. We're talking about the consciousness of man trapped in the ego consciousness. So that base or ego consciousness or beast consciousness, if you will, is 9 or 666, okay? Now, occultically, the number that has always represented divine consciousness or consciousness that is infused with the divine, infused with the light of the creator, unity consciousness, thought, emotion, and action unified, okay, and you know, knowledge, care, and courage unified, has been 3. 3 is the Trinity, okay? It's the 3 aspects of consciousness combined together. And this is the number 777. You're adding the Trinity to change the beast, okay? You're adding 111, the Trinity, to 666 to get 777. Now just think about it numerologically again. 777, the number of man in unity consciousness, is the same as 3, okay? 7 plus 7 plus 7, 21. 2 plus 1, 3. So 666 and 9 are gematria equivalents, occultic numerological equivalents. 777 symbolically represents numerologically the same as the Trinity, 3. Man in godly consciousness as opposed to satanic consciousness. So to go from the 666 to the 777 is to make the journey in consciousness from beast or satanic consciousness to godly, divine consciousness. Just as going from 9 to 3 is to make the journey from going from base consciousness to unity consciousness. Hence, a lot of light occultists look at the number 93 as the number of awakening, of transformation, of the activation of the human will in cooperation with the divine will. So that's why the number 93 is so significant occultically. It is the number of transformation in consciousness and ascension. So that's why I requested show number 93, because I consider it a powerful number. And to me, what it ultimately represents is the great work. It is the number of the great work, and it is a number of true change for the better and for the positive in our world.
That's wonderful, man. Well, and it's great to know. And know that I just started this podcast 1 year ago, and we're already at number 93.
Amazing.
You know, and so when you have something that you want to do, there's no excuse. Just do it. Take the action and do it. And it's been, you know, a pleasure to have you on today. And you know, I love learning from you and you know, love just the fact that we have access to platforms now that we can put out this information. And it's my...
Yes, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's my free will choice to do this. And we don't need to do this. In fact, just like what you say a lot of times, you know, I got a ton of stuff to do. And you know, I don't really want to do this, but I can't leave this world in the way that it is today, knowing what I know. I have to take action. I can't.
That's right.
You know.
You know, it's we could all be doing other things for ourselves right now, you know, but we have a responsibility morally to put this information out into the world and help others to understand it. So, you know, I accept that as my personal responsibility and my personal work to do. And Bill, I would just want to thank you for not only inviting me on to the podcast today, but for doing this work that you do. That's ultimately what this is all about. It's about getting involved, just starting something, and staying in a dynamic of persistence and courage to keep doing it. Whether you see the results right away, keep doing it, and you're going to see results down the line. So, Bill, thanks so much for all the effort that you've put forward into the Free Your Mind podcast, and it's been a pleasure being your guest today.
Oh, well, man, you keep your eye on the big prize, and do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law.
And love is the law, love under will.
That's right, man. Well, awesome, Mark. Thank you so much for your time today. And how can people get a hold of you?
You could check out my main website at whatonearthishappening.com. There's a huge body of knowledge up on that website, including videos and my audio podcast series, which I always recommend for beginners. Please go to that audio series. You could just click the podcast tab on my website and listen to those that podcast series in order, starting with number one. Go back to number one, listen in order at your own pace, and that will unveil a tapestry of information and initiate into the occult knowledge, if you will. And that's the way I think you'll gain maximum value from the information on my site. Also, check out the videos there. Once again, that website is whatonearthishappening.com.
Check it out, folks. Whatonearthishappening.com. And thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Free Your Mind podcast, number 93. We love you. We'll talk soon. Bye, everybody.